Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 21, Conversation between Manu and Kardama. Tatha sa chaham paribodhu kamaha samana shilan grihamedha dhenum upeiva mulam ashesha mulam durasayah kama dugha nribhi I'm sorry. Kama dugha angripasya kama dugha angripasya. Tatha sachaham paribodhu kama shamana shilam grihamedha dhenu upeivan mulamesh mulashesha mulam upeivan mulamashesha mulam durashaya kama dughaṃ kṛpasya tatha sachaham paribodhu kama samana shilam grihamedha dhenu upeivan mulam mashesha mulam durashaya kama dughaṃ kṛpasya tatha sachaham paribodhu kama samana shilam grihamedha dhenu upeivan mulam mashesha mulam durashaya kama dughaṃ kṛpasya
Sachaham paribodhu kamam
samana shilam
Who will do that? Can Radhi? Will you do, can you do that, Yamuna? Can you read it from there? You are not right. Radhika? Can you? Then I'll ask Gaurangi. Okay. From tomorrow you take care. To. Okay, so you make it a point to sit in front of the board. Alright? Or better still is you can write it down on a piece of paper. Everybody can make that practice. Take a notebook, write down the verse of that day so that if you can't see from a distance, you can see that. Okay. Mitravinda. Tatha, similarly, sa, myself, cha, also, aham, I, paribodhu, kamaha, desiring to marry, samana shilam, a girl of like disposition, griha medha, in married life, dhenum, a cow of plenty. Upeivan. Have approached. Mulam. The root. Lotus feet. Ashesha. Of everything. Mulam. The source. Durashayaha. With lustful desire. Kamadugha. Yielding all desire. Angripasya. Of you, who are the tree. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition, who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I to have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition,
who may prove to be a veritable cow
of plenty in my married life,
to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter
of your lotus feet,
which are the source of everything.
For you are like a desire tree.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In spite of his condemning, persons who approach the Lord for material advantages, Kardama Muni expressed his material inability and desire before the Lord by saying, although I know that nothing material should be asked from you, I nevertheless desire to marry a girl of like disposition. The phrase like disposition is very significant. Formerly, boys and girls of similar dispositions were married. The similar nature of the boy and girl were united in order to make them happy. Not more than 25 years ago, and perhaps it is still current, parents in India used to consult the horoscope of the boy and girl to see whether there would be factual union in their psychological conditions. These considerations are very important. Nowadays, marriage takes place without such consultation, and therefore, soon after the marriage, there is divorce and separation. Formerly, husband and wife used to live together peacefully throughout the whole life. But nowadays, it is a very difficult task. Kardama Muni wanted to have a wife of like disposition, because a wife is necessary to assist in spiritual and material advancement. It is said that a wife yields the fulfillment of all desires in religion, economic development, and sense gratification. If one has a nice wife, he is to be considered a most fortunate man. In astrology, a man is considered fortunate when has great wealth, very good sons, or a very good wife. Of these three, one who has a very good wife is considered the most fortunate. Before marrying, one should select a wife of like disposition and not be enamored by so-called beauty or other attractive features for sense gratification. In the Bhagavatam, 12th canto, it is said that in the Kali Yuga, marriage will be based on the consideration of sex life. As soon as there is deficiency in sex life, the question of divorce will arise. Kardama Muni could have asked his benediction from Uma. For it is recommended in the scriptures that if anyone wants a good wife, he should worship Uma. But he preferred to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead because it is recommended in the Bhagavatam that everyone, whether he is full of desire, has no desire, or desires liberation, should worship the Supreme Lord. If of these classes of men, one tries to be happy by fulfillment of material desires, another wants to be happy by becoming one with the Supreme, and another, the perfect man, is a devotee. He does not want anything in return from the personality of Godhead. He only wants to render transcendental loving service. In any case, everyone should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he will fulfill everyone's desire. The advantage of worshipping the Supreme Person is that even if one has desires for material enjoyment, if he worships Krishna, he will gradually become a pure devotee and have no more material hankering.
Tatha te chaham paribodhu kamaha samana shilam grihamedha dhenu upe ivan mulam ashisha mulam durashaya kamo dughangripasya.
Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition, who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. So, Kardama Muni is praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kardama Muni performs such sincere devotional service to the Lord that the Lord personally appeared to him. So from that we can understand that Kardama Muni was not an ordinary person. And here, although it appears that Kardama Muni is admitting that he has become afflicted by lusty desires and therefore he wants to marry a suitable girl of like disposition. But here we have to understand that these are just the transcendental activities of a very, very exalted personality. The bottom line actually is that Kardama Muni had to get married. Why Kardama Muni had to get married? Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead had to appear as his son. And so behind marriage there is an apparent desire for association of a woman, but Kardama Muni's position is not like that of an ordinary person. And so in this way, Kardama Muni made one point before him, for our benefit. In the previous verse, Kardama Muni pointed out that if at all we have to approach for any desire, for fulfillment of any desire, whether material or spiritual, we must approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the purport of this verse, Srila Prabhupada made that point very clear also. Prabhupada is pointing out, first Prabhupada pointed out that Kardama Muni could have approached Uma. Uma means Durga Devi. And generally, it is the custom in the Vedic culture that when somebody wants a beautiful wife, a good wife, he approaches Uma's benediction. Or Lord Shiva's benediction. We see that culture in Krishna's pastimes, when the gopis wanted to have Krishna as their husband, who did they approach? Katayani Devi. Who is Katayani Devi? Katayani Devi is Durga Devi. We also saw in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, the young girls on the bank of the Ganges, what they used to do? Worship Lord Shiva and Durga. Why they used to do that? In order to get a suitable husband, in order to get a good husband. So this Prabhupada is pointing out that this is the Vedic, generally the custom is for good wife or good husband, one approaches Devi or Shankar, Lord Shiva, Mahakal. But a devotee never approaches Devi or any demigod or even Lord Shiva. Their attitude is, if at all they approach the Devi or the demigods, devtas or even Lord Shiva, why do they approach them? If at all they approach them, like we also visit Mahakal Temple. We also, when we visit Devi's temple. But what is our approach to them? Is our approach dhanang dehi, janang dehi? No, our approach is, please give us devotion to Krishna. Please bless us that we can become a good devotee. How many devotees are sitting outside? Parshuram, welcome back. Shamangi, so come inside. Just make some room.
And Prabhupada, explaining that point, Prabhupada is quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam. Akamo sarva kamova moksha kamo udarodhi tibrena bhakti yogena jajeta purushan param. Akama, if he is free from all desire. Sarva kama, if he is full of desire. And moksha kama, if he is desirous of liberation. It doesn't matter. Actually, these three kind of people cover the entire population. Entire human population is covered by that. Either one is an akama, or he is sarva kama, or he is a moksha kama. But if he is udaradhi, udaradhi, udar means broad. And dhi, yesterday we came across that word, medhasa. That medhasa or medha is coming from the root word dhi. Dhi, sattang parang dhi mahi, dhi mahi. Dhi is intelligence. And udaradhi, those who have a very advanced intelligence, broad, those who have great intelligence, those who are very, very intelligent, what they will do? What are you doing? Tibrena bhakti yogena jajeta purushan param. Tibrena, with deep and intense bhakti yogena, devotional service. Jajeta, jajeta means jajan, jajeta vashe, purusham param, paramang purusham. Who is param purush? Supreme personality. So are you all doing that? So you all are udaradhis. So now, whether you are akama, doesn't matter. Whether you are sarvakama, also doesn't matter. But moksha kama, the devotees do not want moksha. Whether you are akama or sarvakama, leave aside the moksha kama aspect. Because why a devotee doesn't want moksha? Because when there is liberation, especially when they mean through the liberation which indicates sajujya mukti, this moksha generally indicates sajujya mukti. In sajujya mukti, the personal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not there. Therefore, there is no possibility of rendering devotional service. Therefore, a devotee never desires liberation. He may want liberation, but those are four positive kinds of liberation. Those positive liberations are sarupya, samipya, salakya, and shashti. Sarupya means having the similar feature, the appearance as the Supreme Personality of God. Samipya, to have the facility to be close to the Supreme Personality of God. Shalokya, to reside in the same planet as the Supreme Personality of God, Vaikuntha Loka. Or Shashti, to have the same kind of opulence as the Supreme Personality of God. So these four are positive liberations. Why? Why positive liberation? Because through these liberations, one can have an opportunity to render devotional service. These liberations are based on devotion. But the negative liberation, Shajujya Mukti, to merge in the Brahma Jyoti, where the personal aspect of the Lord is missing, a devotee doesn't desire. That kind of liberation has been described as Kaivalya. Kaivalya means to merge in the Brahma Jyoti, the bodily effulgence of the Lord. But the devotee's attitude is, Kaivalya narakayati. Narakayati is like going to hell. Does anybody want to go to hell in his right consciousness? Even Gaurangi is shaking her head vehemently. So nobody wants to go to hell. Why? Because hellish condition is suffering condition. Who wants to suffer? Everybody wants to enjoy. So nobody wants to suffer. Suffering means what? Suffering means absence of joy. So Kaivalya means absence of joy. Therefore, for a devotee, Kaivalya is like going to hell. It's a suffering condition. It's not a joyful condition. And generally, the devotee, especially those who are in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they do not even want these four kinds of positive liberation. Actually, that has been pointed out in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas strictly follow, strictly adhere to the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam. And what is Bhagavatam is saying? Diyamanam nagrinhanti bina matsevana. Saruppa, Samipa, Salakya, Shashti, these four kinds of liberation, Diyamana, even if they are offered to the devotee, na grinhanti, they do not accept it. The Lord Himself is saying, Binam, actually this is the statement of Kapildev, the Lord as the son of Kardamama. Diyamana na grinhanti, Binam atseva. Without my without devotional service unto me. If there is no possibility of rendering devotional service in these four kinds of positive liberation of Saruppya, Samipya, Salakya and Shashti, a devotee doesn't want that. So now the main point that has been established here, that when a personality like Kardama Muni desires something, he will approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the first consideration. He will approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He won't approach anyone else. As Prabhupada pointed out, not even he won't ask for any benediction from Devi. Although, material desires are very easily fulfilled by approaching Devi and Lord Shiva. Now, a devotee simply, even if he has some material desire, or that verse in Bhagavatam pointed out, sarva kamava, if he is full of desires, devotees are generally free from all desires. They don't have any desires. They are free from desires. That means they are free from desire for sense gratification. That is the meaning of the word, akam. No desire for one's own enjoyment. What is their main consideration? Their consideration is simply to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead for His pleasure. That is the desire of a devotee. But does it mean then a devotee suffers? Devotee doesn't desire any enjoyment, but does it mean that a devotee suffers? No. Does a rich man's servant suffer by serving his master? No. The servant enjoys with the master. Although the servant doesn't separately desire for his enjoyment, but enjoyment automatically comes to him. That is the wonderful thing about devotional service. Jajeto Purushang Param. So when that Purushang Param, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is served with all sincerity, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes care of his subject, takes care of his servant. That reciprocation is automatic. Therefore, a devotee doesn't need to ask for anything. Just as the example is given, does a rich man's servant have to separately ask the master for anything? When the master is favorably disposed to the servant, the master will give him anything and everything. And this relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a loving relationship like that of a servant and master. Or father and son. Even deeper than a relationship as a servant. When the son is there, the father will go out of his way to take care of his son. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Purushang Param, is the Supreme Father. Tashang Brahma Mahajyonir Aham Bija Pradapita. So I am the seed-giving father of all the living entities. So what to speak of a rich man, even a poor man takes care of his children to the best of his ability. Even a poor man doesn't want to make his children suffer. He will undergo all kinds of difficulties to provide for the children. Now what to speak of the richest personality, the supreme personality? We can't even imagine how wonderfully he takes care of his children. Now the children also can be of two types. Disobedient children and obedient children. The disobedient children causes distress to the father and he himself is subjected to suffering. He has many unpleasant demands. Give me this, give me that. Sometimes spoiled children are like that. Like for example, King Vena. When he was a child, he was the son of a king. But when he was a child, he was such a tyrant that even as a child he used to harass his friends. Then when he grew up a little more, he made them drown in the water. He used to kill the children. Play his playmates, and playfully he would just drown them in the water. Kill them. There are some children are like that. And these children, what do? They simply cause distress to the father. And as a result of that, the father left everything and went to the forest. Or sometimes the father banishes the child. Just as in the Ikshaku dynasty, King Sagara, Asamanjasa. King Sagara, he banished his son, Asamanjasa, because he was a tyrant. He was causing distress to others. He banished him. Get out of me. He warned him. Although he was a son, he said, now you get out. I don't even want to see you. So sometimes the father takes such a severe step when the children are disobedient, when the children cause trouble. But those who are obedient children, the father goes out of his way to take care of those. As I was saying, even a poor man takes care of his children. What to speak of a rich man, not only the rich man, the richest personality. And we can see in the kingdom of our God the Father, our Father the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no scarcity. Does anybody have any scarcity? Actually, nobody has any scarcity. In the kingdom of Haribol, ye off kar diye. So, the kingdom of God, there is no scarcity. Like no one, Prabhupada used to make that point sometime about scarcity. That there is no scarcity in kingdom of Krishna. If at all there is any scarcity, that scarcity has been created by man. In the kingdom of God, there is abundance. And Prabhupada once gave an example. That do you see any scarcity in the animal kingdom? Do you see any animal in nature is starving to death in normal condition? No. Do you see any birds starving? Do you see any ants starving? Do you see any big animal like elephant starving? Do you see an huge animal like a whale starving? From ant to the whale, or what to speak of a whale, there's a fish called Timingila that eats timis, meaning the whales. So you can well imagine how big those fishes are. Those fish are. They eat whales. According to our understanding, whales are the biggest creature. Anyway, at least we can see the whale. So from an ant to the whale in the nature, does anyone suffer? Is anyone starving? No. But we can see that there is, if at all, some starvation, some scarcity is there in the human society. In the West, there was a misconception that in India people are starving to death. Sometimes when I was in the West, long time back, sometimes my friends used to tell me that, oh, in India people are starving. And I used to feel so upset. And I used to tell them, look, I was brought up in India, born and brought up in India. I haven't seen a single man starving. There may be beggars. But even the beggars are not starving. Sometimes the beggar might make more money than an ordinary employee. I haven't seen a single person starving. What to speak of starving to death? These misconceptions are there. And especially the Western capitalistic society want to portray the less mechanically, technically advanced countries like that. Oh, people are, they are not advanced. They are starving. They have to become like us. But the thing is that they cannot survive without this mechanical advancement. Europe and America is so cold in winter, unless they have all these arrangements, they cannot survive. Whereas in India, we don't need them. But they need to make India a big market. So they are training people, creating the demand in India. Oh, you don't need a heater, but you need an air conditioner. But when I was young, there was no air conditioner. Our life was going on. There was sometimes it used to get hot. But a fan used to be enough. Anyway, the point is that if at all there is starvation, that's only in the human society. Not in the ant society, not in the insect society, not in the bird society, not in the reptile society, not in the aquatic society. Nowhere there is a question of starvation. Only in the human society there is starvation. And Prabhupada pointed out that scarcity in the human society has been created by human beings. And Prabhupada gave a classic example. He said, take a bag of rice, put it in the middle of the road at night. In the morning, some birds will come, they'll eat as much as they need, they'll fly away. Then some cows and goats will come. They'll eat as much as they need, and then they'll go away. But as soon as a human being comes, what he'll do? He'll pick up the whole bag and walk away. So man is not satisfied by fulfilling his needs. Man is rather directed by his greed. He's never satisfied. He wants to have more and more and more. He's never satisfied. He doesn't think that for today I have enough. His concern is what will happen to me tomorrow? What will happen to me a month from now? What will happen to me 10 years from now? Not only that, what will happen to my children? What will happen to my grandchildren? What will happen to my great-grandchildren? He is obsessed with these ideas. So face the reality. Just see how much you have. Don't consider how much you do not have. Just consider whether you have enough. And that is the secret of real happiness. Just see how much you have. Everyone is so much concerned, oh, I don't have this, I don't have that. But hardly anyone thinks how much I already have. So, the Vedas are actually giving us that indication how to become happy, how to become content. And that happiness is from within. The happiness is not from without. We think that by projecting ourselves externally, we'll become happy. A poor man wants to be a rich man. And a rich man wants to be a king. A rich man is not happy just being rich. But a poor man thinks that if I become rich, I'll be so happy. But when he goes to a rich man, if he really stands on the shoes of a rich man, what will he find? The rich man also is not happy. He is thinking, I want to become the king. And the king wants to become a monarch. The monarch wants to become the ruler of the entire earth planet. The ruler of the entire earth planet wants to become the ruler of the heavenly planet. And this way, the desire just keeps on increasing and increasing. Therefore, the secret of happiness is to consider how much you already have. How often do we feel how wonderful it is to breathe? Now tell me, can this experience of breathing be purchased with any amount of money? Well, if you don't know what it means, I'll ask you at the time of death, when you won't be able to breathe one breath. For one lungful of breath, you'll be prepared to give anything in this world. That is how wonderful it is to breathe. But do we really go into that and experience and try to feel that? How wonderful it is that I'm breathing? So that is how wonderful the life is. Like we have to experience the joy of our existence by really going into it. But what do? We waste our entire life by thinking, oh, I haven't got this, I haven't got that. I haven't got color TV. I do not have a nice car. I do not have this, I do not have that. But how often do we think, oh, today the prasad was so wonderful. With every single bite, if we try to relish the taste of the food. When we are thirsty, if we can try to experience the taste of water. You won't understand it now how relishable this taste of water is. But if you lost your way in the middle of Sahara Desert, and you don't have any water to drink, then you will understand. It happened after the Second World War in countries like Germany when there was so much scarcity. The people are prepared to give anything. They were prepared to give thousands of Deutschmarks
meaning thousands of dollars just for a bottle of water. They are prepared to give anything just for some food. Because at that time there was no food, there was nothing. The country has been bombed completely, wrecked to the ground. Nothing was available. People were hiding in the forest. I used to live in my landlady she had to go through this Second World War. She was a young girl at that time. And she used to tell me how terrible the situation was during the war and after the war. So this is how we can consider the very basic things that we are getting without any endeavor in our life is so wonderful. And that can be the source of such incredible joy. We do not have to go out to our spiritual platform as yet. Even being situated in the material platform, we can experience how wonderful life is. How beautiful life is. How joyful life is. And that is the secret of happiness. Don't consider what you don't have. Right? Just consider how much you already have. And now that you've got Krishna consciousness, why worry? Now you have established your relationship with your Supreme Father, who is the richest personality. So why should you worry about anything? He will take care. He has taken care of you all these years. And now that you have surrendered, won't he take care of you? He will take care of you in all respects. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah? Do you want to ask? Aditya? Okay. Yes.
My question is, we understand that one of the characteristics of Jivarena Bhakti Yogena is it minimizes liberation. So if somebody is engaged in devotional service, how is it that he still desires liberation?
That is, desire for liberation is at a neophyte stage. When somebody is desiring liberation, we have to understand that he is at a neophyte stage. At advanced stage, he won't. Right? Like Prabhupada said, that even do desire for liberation is good, because that means you are not interested in material life. That is good, but that's not the goal. The goal is actually na dhanam, na janam, na sundari. Kavitangva jagadisha kamai. Mama janmani janmani shari. Liberation means the end of my life. But here the prayer is, life after life I can become engaged. So that is the ultimate situation of the devotee. I will do whatever you want. If you want me to come time and time again, I'm prepared to come. Even if you want me to go to hell, I'll go there. That is a devotee. Doesn't desire for his own pleasure or enjoyment. He's simply concerned about the desire of his Lord and Master.
So, how we understand is that what we are desiring is actually, it is going to assist us.
Okay. The thing is, you see, spiritual life again, especially devotional service, is a very practical process. There is no need to artificially desire something or become something. If, like here we are seeing Kardama Muni. He has the urge to get married and he is honestly admitting, I want to get married. Now the Supreme Personality of Godhead came to him and he is asking, he could have asked anything, but he is asking this benediction, like why? Because, you know, that is what is in his mind. So be real. Don't be artificial. Like, if you have desire for something, go through it. That's the point. There is no need to artificially pretend to be something. When the heart is so full of desires, and that actually happened in our movement often, or rather in the past. Prematurely many people took sannyas. It's not possible, it's difficult to get rid of material desire completely. But one has to struggle. But they had the desires, they were not strong enough to struggle, to subdue those desires, and prematurely they took the life of renunciate. And after a while they just gave up their sannyas and got married. So it shouldn't, in spiritual life there is no need for that. Yeah, it's wonderful if you can remain a brahmachari. That's the best. That's Prabhupada, as I often mention, Prabhupada told me, just offer this life to Krishna. Just one life. See what happens. And if nothing happens, what's the loss? Just one life out of so many. So that's the best, if we can maintain that. But, you know, if we have other desires, then well, go through it.
And when we understand the worth of life and the worth of purposes that we may have, like you were saying, giving one life is a remittance, it will serve a bigger purpose and you can really, you know, dedicate yourself to a particular task and not be, you know, with divided attention. But you may witness that still you are, you know, your mind is, some desires are there. There is that, and then there is reality.
Yeah. So, well, there are two ways to approach that. One approach is that when the body is young, the influence of the mode of passion will be there, and all these desires will be there. You know, it's a natural thing, right? But just tolerate and go through it. In course of time, in about 20 years time, you'll become old, right? Then all those, you know, urges of the senses will not be so prominent, right? That is one way. The other way is, go through it. If you feel that some desire is so intense and you need to go through that, then what will happen? While going through that, you'll become so sick and tired of it that you'll say, I don't want it. I didn't really want it. That is the thing. Because with every bit of enjoyment in this material nature, there's a whole lot of suffering. So be prepared for that. Right? Or if you do not know about it, like, you will realize it in course of time. Like, that's why one point I made, make very clear to the devotees. If you want to get married, you have to take care of your family. Don't expect that the temple is going to maintain your family. If you want to get married, be responsible. Go earn your money and take care of your household. Because then only they'll understand that how difficult it is. Because this material life, in one hand, there is some allurement in this sense gratification. But ultimately, you know, like, it's all a big burden. And then, at least, and then that's why Prabhupada was very emphatic.
No divorce. Once you got married, you have to take responsibility of your wife. Not that I just get married and then day after tomorrow, after 2 days, one dumps his wife and children and goes away. No.
Well, it still appears that when if you're deciding to get married, in Krishna consciousness, it still appears in my ignorant mind that there still you are little selfish. You still have some personal desire. There's not complete surrender.
That's what I'm talking about also. I'm saying that the household life is actually based on this desire for sense gratification. But the bottom line again is that, okay, if you have to go through it in a Krishna conscious way. Because at least, you know, there are advantages that when a materialistic person gets married, their demands are endless. Whereas when a devotee gets married, because they are devotees, their demands are and requirements are considerably reduced. Yes, Radharani? What is the new philosophy?
There is a book called Secrets.
By?
I see. And the philosophy is also asking the universe for what you want. And the universe will put it in the economy.
Yeah.
And then it goes on to say that you are a happy person, you are joy, because you are perfection. The real you is actually perfection, because you part and parcel of perfection.
So what's your opinion? You read the book. What do you think? Yeah, right. Yeah. This is, are you surprised? Well, the world of cheaters and the cheated. So what better do you expect? The world is full of cheated and cheaters. Some cheater comes and the rest of the world is cheated by him. Like all these things that are going on in the name of spiritual life or way to happiness and so forth, you know, it's just simple cheating. The real thing is Srimad Bhagavatam. The only way you can become happy is by surrendering to Krishna. No other way, no other way. Where is Yamuna Priya? Thank you. Wonderful. We all knew her spiritual potency. Thank you very much. Thank you. That is the glory of Srila Prabhupada. You know, even a woman can defeat a scientist and a Mayavadi sannyasi. Even a child can do that. That's what Prabhupada was pointing out. Yes? Should I ask Bhima? Ha, ha, ha. Maybe he'll be a better person. Okay.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada actually made three considerations here. That who has great wealth, very good sons, or a very good wife? In simple words, he'll have to spend most of his time with his wife. And if she is not, you know, she is not compatible or pleasant or good, then his life will become miserable. Like, you see, his immediate connection, his immediate association is his wife. Right? The sons will grow, and if the son is bad, so let's look at it the other way around. Like, if his son, well, if he doesn't have wealth, but if he has good son and good wife, you know, his life will be happy because, you know, nature provides. And ultimately, the joy that one derives out of his existence is ultimately an internal factor. It's not so much an external thing. There's the first, wealth. The son, say, if the son, if his sons are not good, then he can banish them, he can get rid of them, right? But if his wife is not good, then his life will become bad. So that's why when one has a good wife, that actually supersedes the good fortune of even having a lot of wealth or good children. Now just consider in simple words. One has a lot of money. His children are very nice. But his wife is not. How will it be his life? But his wife is very nice, but his children are not nice. He doesn't have any wealth. How will it be his life? Rather, his wife will become such a source of inspiration and support. So that's why. Okay? Don't ask a sannyasi. Anyway, from whatever understanding I have from the scriptures, you see, the scripture says that man and woman, by nature, they are opposite. Man is strong, woman is delicate. Right? Man is meant to make all the arrangements in outside, and a woman's business is to take care of the household. Man brings the money, and the woman spends, utilizes. And in the long run, you see, man has been compared to a tree and a woman has been compared to a creeper. You see, a tree can survive just by itself, but a creeper needs the tree to climb up. So a woman needs a man for her. Of course, today's world has become very artificial. Like, but if you live in a natural world, then, you know, it is very important, it's essential that a woman is married to a good husband. That need is not only physiological, but it's a psychological need also. So this is how, see, a woman has to be dependent, and submissive, and a man must be caring and protective. And that is the mantra for wedding actually announces that a man takes the vow that he will provide and give protection, take care
of his wife. And the woman pledges that I will always be loyal to you. I'll always be faithful to you. I will take care of your needs. Now here, an expression has been used in this verse when Kardamuni is telling the Lord that Kamadhug. Kamadhug means one who fulfills all desires. Kamadhug. Okay, angry, na, kamadhuga, yeah. Yielding all desires, fulfilling all desires. Huh? No, this kamadhuga means one who fulfills all desires. So, like a woman is meant to fulfill the desires. So this is what constitutes, you know, a good wife. These are the considerations for a good wife. Now look at today's society. There is no consideration for that. Because she doesn't need to depend upon a man. She is, a woman is independent. Especially in the West. I mean, you have seen that. Like, both husband and wife is working. Right? See, generally, in a household, what would happen? A normal household. The man would work throughout the day. He would come back in the evening at home. And there'll be his wife to greet him. And to take care of him. She already made the prasad. And so, you know, but now when both of them are working, both of them are coming home tired. And both of them are expecting that the other person is going to do whatever is necessary to be done. And as a result of that, both of them are fighting like cats and dogs. Yeah. So that's why I always propose that let the men work and women stay at home and take care. Like recently when I was in Australia, I saw most of the couples there. Both of them are working, excepting only one couple. And that couple is going to settle down, coming to Ujjain and settle down. They're planning to settle down in Ujjain. Very nice, Rajasthani couple. They're from Jaipur and the girl is from Ajmer. You know Shravanananda. Shravanananda and Alka. Yeah. Now they're planning to come to Ujjain. So Alka doesn't, now, Alka does some work, but she takes care of children. She works from home. They don't have any children. But besides that, I think everyone is working. Both husband and, they have children. And what they're doing, the children are sent to the creche. You know, just right after birth, mother gets only 1 month's holiday. So just can you imagine, like, a 1 month old baby is separated from the mother throughout the day. Like what life it is. And most of them are in the IT business. In normal work, you work for 8 hours. And in IT, you work for 12 hours. And they make you, they pay you good money, but they make you work like a donkey. So what life? That's what I was telling them. Like what's the point in leading a life like this? Like if the mother cannot take care of the child, and if the child is deprived of the mother's affection, then just imagine how the child is going to grow up. Yeah. Thank you for listening to me.
Yeah. Radharani, Hare Krishna. This is from whom? Let me see. Even after we are getting all the opportunities to do devotional service, sometimes I feel that I am lacking and not putting my sincere efforts. I take the thing for granted. Is it lack of gratitude? What can be done to make our consistent efforts and to increase our gratitude? No name. Who? Oh, you. Okay. Good. Very good. Yeah. You see, did everybody understand the question? Okay, I'll read the question again. Even after we are getting all the opportunities to do devotional service, sometimes I feel that I am lacking and not putting my sincere efforts. I take the things for granted. Is it lack of gratitude? What can be done to make our consistent efforts and to increase our gratitude? Yeah, so when you realize that something is lacking, you are lacking in something, what should you do? Huh? If it's lacking, then what will you do? Shouldn't you try to compensate for that? Right? Agar kuch kami ho raha hai, to kya karna chahiye? Aise baith ke sochte rehna, ya uske liye kuch karna chahiye? So we have to do something. But that's the first thing, that if you feel that something is lacking, something, that means something needs to be done. So do that. The second point is, this is a very good feeling. To feel that way is very good. Because this is a sign of advancement. If you are not advanced, then you would have thought, oh, I have become a devotee and I am rendering so much service, I am the best devotee. Right? That is the mentality of a neophyte devotee. But when you begin to advance, then you realize, how much you are lacking, what you are lacking. So when you realize that you are lacking in something, then you must cover it up. Do it. Right? And as far as the gratitude is concerned, like, recognize what you got, recognize how you're benefiting, and then that will give you the feeling of gratitude. Okay? You're chanting your 16 rounds nicely. Okay. Very good. Okay, so I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande.